From the Findlay Toyota Studio, it's Cofield and Company.
Alienate yourselves. Go. Go and alienate. You have my blessing.
I see you, boy. Hey, represent, baby. Yeah.
I'm ready to drink tonight, sir.
So. No.
It's time for Cofield and Company with Steve Cofield on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. 5 o'clock hour. Findlay Toyota Studios. We'll be back out on the road tomorrow. Thomas and Mac before a UNLV game. Reno is in town. It's a redout. That game goes down at 7 o'clock, so we'll be out there from 3 until 6:30. New company member today, Mike Pritchard, right? Familiar name, Las Vegas, NFL player, back in Vegas now on a full-time basis and back with Lotus Broadcasting and Fox Sports Las Vegas and ESPN Las Vegas on a mostly full-time basis as well. Joe Esposito is in, our college basketball expert. Coach Joe knows. Let's get to the Big Five.
Battle-Born Injury Lawyers presents the Big Five at Five, number five.
So what's going on, Joe?
I almost didn't come today.
Why not?
Load management. Load management.
Well, you actually practice load management during the show, right? You're the one guy sitting. I have guilted everyone who's ever been on the show into standing the entire time.
Not Adam.
You're right. Adam does not stand.
Once I saw him sitting, then I started to sit.
Yeah. Mike got guilted after the first 2 hours. He's like, look at Cofield. What a specimen over here. He's standing the whole time. You didn't say the specimen part.
I did not say the specimen part.
I love it. All right. We got a bunch of football coming up. We also want to talk a little radio. We come out of the gates here. We're going to go back to your old market. Mike, did Dan Le Batard sucker the Denver market? Do they not know what he's doing? What's the story here? Are they all pissed off because the Nuggets are not getting respect?
They are. They're sensitive out there. I talked about athletes being sensitive, but Denver media is really sensitive about the Nuggets because flyover city, they're never going to get a superstar unless they draft one and all this kind of thing. They're not getting the respect because they have a really good team.
Yeah.
You have Le Batard with the comedy that he has talking about boycotting the NBA, basically, or
if the Nuggets win the title.
If the Nuggets win a title. And then you have serious media Nugget guy / fan that tweeted right back at him and really called him out. He thought he was calling him out, talking about, you know, this is what national sports talk hosts. They don't have anything to talk about, so they want to bag on the Nuggets, basically. And this guy works for Altitude and Kroenke, which owns the Nuggets, of course.
Right.
So you can see the
sensitivity there. So right
there,
you're a loser because you're putting yourself in the crosshairs to be called a team guy. Yeah, he tweeted out, when sports talk radio hosts run out of content, you would think a national show that has so much backing would be better than this, but I guess not. Have you not listened to the Dan Le Batard show?
Nope.
Do you think he cares about hardcore sports topics? He's trying to twist your tees, and he just did it. Dummy.
He got you. Exactly. But that's what happened. I mean, the Nuggets were not happy years ago, and Joe knows this. I mean, Carl was out there one and dones, even though he had good teams, and they got to the Western Conference Finals at one point, and they were unhappy with that. Then they missed the playoffs for years. Now they're getting back to the playoffs. Who knows if they get to the Western Conference Finals or not? Who knows if they win an NBA title or not? But sensitive Denver media / fans certainly take exception to anybody that wants to call him out.
They got so much to talk about out there. Are you kidding me? Nikola! The guy's averaging a triple-double barely. Since January, he's been averaging 24 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists. The guy's playing unbelievable. They're down 23 the other night to the Spurs Monday night, and they come back and win. They're right there. It's something to talk about. You know, they might be a player. Now, they don't have the talent maybe the Clippers have or overall or the Lakers may have, but they got enough talent to make some noise. Now, it's going to be tough. But I'm going to tell you, there's somebody to talk about. They're doing a great job with that program right now, and it's exciting. That kid can play.
Yeah.
He may be the MVP.
I actually like Malone, too.
Malone's a great coach.
Yeah, they beat I'm trying to remember the team that they beat, and he said, take that L on the way out. Good sound bite, good drop.
Okay.
I mean, the coach said that about his young team. They play the Lakers, I think, tomorrow. Tomorrow night, they play the Lakers, so that would be a good test for him.
No question. And Jamal Murray, he's on fire.
Yeah.
Last two games, 67 points.
What do you think about Michael Porter Jr., this kid that they have?
Yeah, I like him.
Okay.
I like him. I think he's a guy that can really play. He can score, you know, all three levels. I think he's going to be a good player for him. And I really like watching them. They're fun to watch. You know, Will Barton, old Memphis guy, good guy. I got to know him when I was at Memphis. Another guy that can really play. You know, that's so they've got some pieces. Now they don't they have the Lakers. And they might not have the same team like the Clippers, but they're going to cause some people some trouble.
In a way, Levitard, one, did the NBA a favor because now he's got Denver feeling super inferior even more than they normally feel. So now that's a great angle. And if you're Levitard, and I guess sometimes he's a company man, usually he's kind of pushing back against ESPN. Mike's right. Lakers, Nuggets, tomorrow, ESPN. So now you'll have a nice audience for that one. The evil empire Lakers that everyone wants to see in the finals, like Levitard. That East Coast elite! Against our Denver Nuggets. All right, next up.
Number four.
All right, Joe. College basketball. Now's the time of year. You're trying to get right as a college basketball team and be ready to go in your conference tournament. Mountain West Conference Tournament. Clearly the favorite will be San Diego State. Who's the second best team?
I keep saying Utah State. I keep telling you Utah State. And I still believe that.
They were very impressive when I saw them last week in person. They have a massive home court advantage if their students show up. I actually, man, it's just about a dead heat for second best team amongst about three teams. I still like the upside and the direction that Colorado State is going in and their ability to shoot the three-pointer.
Yeah,
but it's a good debate.
You got to look at the schedule, and you got to look how the schedule is going to fall. Utah State, I think, has the hardest two games coming up with Boise. And then they've got Colorado State. But then after that, they've got three games they're definitely going to win, I believe. Fresno, Wyoming, and San Jose. And then their last game of the year is at New Mexico, who, you know, we're going to see what they're about. Are they going to turn the corner? Are they going to get better? But
they play tonight with most of their guys back. No Bragg, no J.J. Caldwell, but they're relatively healthy. Jaquan Lyle's playing, but not 100%, and they're playing San Diego State.
Yeah, San Diego State. Instead of losing by 30, they'll lose by 20.
No. So, make it 16, please.
All right, 16.
That was the spread last night when I bet New Mexico.
But I still think Utah State is, and they're playing well. They're starting to play better with the big guy, and I think they're starting to do a better job. So I like Utah State as that number two.
Sorry, Joe. Does this mean at all costs that UNLV probably playing more in that 5, 6, 7, 8 range? They don't want to be 5.
They don't want to be 5.
All right.
Tell the press box. Tell them.
Oh, they were talking about it?
They were talking about it. They're saying, what's Joe thinking? 6. I want 6. I want to play Wyoming. I want another win. I want to go to the NIT. I want to go to CBI, CIT. I want postseason.
You do?
Heck yeah.
How come UNLV, any chance they've had recently to play in those tournaments was like, nah, we can't be bothered.
It. Maybe can't afford it. I don't know.
Well, most of the times that they – Well, actually, they really didn't qualify for the NIT, so then you're going lower than that. I think a lot of times they thought it was beneath them, and what was the point?
Last year NIT didn't qualify? We'll talk about that another time.
Oh, look at you. Okay.
Talk about that another time. But let me just say this.
We're gonna hit that in the grab bag.
I think it's really important that they get more games and more under their belt. You know, guys like Bryce Hamilton get more touches. You know, Amari. I think it'll be good for them to get an extra game. And you don't want to play the number one seed. You know, you don't want to do that. You'd rather play number three, and that could be anybody in the mix.
Can I counter this? I actually think San Diego State is the best matchup for UNLV.
You're crazy.
I don't think they match up with Utah State. I don't think they match up with teams that have good fours and fives. Matt Mitchell is not a power forward. They don't really have a center. Yanni Wetzel wants to go to the perimeter. I'm telling you, what I saw at Utah State, I swear to God, Nemanja Keita is going to be 7'5" by the time he gets to the NBA. He's gigantic. He's sitting there like Wilt holding the ball up. Oh, over 6'5", guys.
But they're not going to play the number two seed, are they? They're not going to get in the 7-10 game. I mean, so I just think it would be better to be 6, even though you want to go obviously do the best you can to do it. Right. But everybody says you want to buy that first week. Kids play so many games nowadays. What's an extra day? What's 4 days instead of 3? Kids in AAU, they play 6 games in 7 nights. I mean, the way growing up is and the way kids are playing AAU basketball, they're playing 2 games a night. So I'm all for 6 seed. If it falls that way, great. I don't want to see them not do well, but I would like to see them finish 6 where they can make a run.
Coach Joe knows. Sometimes I have my doubts. Top 3 stories.
Number 3.
Back to Tom Brady. We do Tom Brady every day on the show because I love it, and freaking Boston is beside itself right now on Tom Brady. So numbers were reported about 10 days ago by one of the NFL Network guys saying, hey, the Patriots are willing to go as high as $30 million. Adam Schefter was on WEEI yesterday talking about that number and the whole contract timeline with the Patriots and TB12.
To pay Tom Brady $30-plus million a year I don't think they can do that, but okay.
Let's not let sacks get in the way here.
Or anything. Okay.
Whoa.
You look at the top quarterback contracts, and you just figure that Brady would be somewhere in that range, but they haven't had any contract talks yet. And I know, you know, listen, the Patriots have various needs, right? They have a lot of different things that they have to do, whether they sign Tom Brady or go a different direction at quarterback. So I think it's easy to just use that number, a nice round square number, $30 million. I don't know how real it is or isn't.
What do you think?
I think that was all a ruse
by the Patriots. Who put this number out?
I don't know.
Someone gave it to Ian Rappaport.
Wishful thinking, because Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time on the open market, free agency, market value, nobody knows what that is. What is market value for the greatest quarterback of all time once he becomes a free agent? You're going to cap it at $30 million? Why are you going to do that? I mean, that's crazy, right? And then people have the gall to say or suggest, oh, he doesn't need the money. Well, tell that to Jeff Bezos, who still runs Amazon. Tell that to any billionaire out there that's still working and making money. I mean, I think Tom Brady, he's not motivated by money. We can say that. I think he wants to win another Super Bowl. But certainly the money is the icing on the cake for him. And if somebody offers him $35, $40 million, he's not going to turn that down. It might take that much, because I think there's going to be a number of teams, more than a handful of teams, that are going to inquire about Tom Brady once he becomes a free agent.
And put the number up at $28, $29, $30 million potentially?
Franchise tag is $27 million. So $30 million? No. You got Patrick Mahomes about to make $40 million at some point. By the way, if you're Kansas City, you better sign him up quick, because when Tom Brady does hit free agency, and if Cam Newton is released, and then you have all these other number one overall picks, Jameis Winston, Mariota, and all these guys are going to be available through free agency, all you're doing is driving the price tag up higher and higher. So I think Tom Brady is going to reset it once free agency begins.
Here's more Schefter.
I mean, March 16th is the date free agency starts.
Yeah.
So I said to you, I think they'll have this done by March 1,
either way.
Yes, I think so. I don't think either side can have this drag on much beyond. Maybe it goes to March 7th or whatever. I mean, I'm not giving you a hard and fast deadline. There's no hard and fast deadline there. I'm just saying, if you're New England, you need to get that answer. And you can't repeat at quarterback what happened at tight end last year.
Right. Gronk, way too late. Mm-hmm. And then they were left with nothing on the free agent market, no trades. At tight end.
But see, Adam sounds like he's talking to the Patriots. Doesn't sound like he's talking to Brady, because why would Brady avoid free agency? Why wouldn't he want to even just test it?
This has
it?
To be done by March 1st or March 7th. Brady's like, no, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. You're not
going to wait.
Right.
You're going to wait. If I tell you to wait, Patriots, you're going to wait. Which that'll be – talk about a story if the Patriots finally throw their hands up and they're like, we can't deal with this anymore. That's Philip Rivers. I mean, that's worse than what just happened with the Chargers and Rivers. I love that. I love that angle. Joe, where's he going? Where's Tom Brady going? Don't say your Jets.
Oh, I wish I could say
Sam Darnold, come on.
I hope he comes here. I hope he comes to Vegas. How cool to be honest with you, that would be awesome. I mean, but Pat Mahomes was in town this last week, and hopefully he saw the new stadium.
Well, I don't think they're going to steal Pat Mahomes.
Oh, he ain't going anywhere.
I'm not saying they're going to steal him, but hopefully he likes it.
Hopefully he likes it, because he may win a lot of games there. All right, top two stories.
Number two.
All right, what's going on with the salary cap casualties and the potential that the Raiders may be able to get that kind of middle-class market player to bolster the roster?
Well, I think it's interesting because, you know, you got some big names. You know, Derek Carr is on this list, by the way, but, you know, Russell Kung is on this list. You think about one name that's intriguing to me, and everybody talks about Patrick Mahomes, just like Joe did, but what did he have around him? Mm. You know that Sammy Watkins could be a cap casualty.
Mm-hmm. He should be.
Okay. Do you know he's wide receiver number 3? And look what he did in a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Kansas City...
Was I mean in saying he should be? Because he makes $16 million a year?
I think when you're that deep, and Sammy Watkins, a number one draft choice, and yeah, he had injuries, I get that, but he's a third choice on their team behind Kelsey and behind Tyreek Hill. I would love to see the Raiders bolster their roster that way, to
like
where
it.
Their number 3 guy is like Sammy Watkins or A.J. Green or somebody like
he
that.
He wouldn't be their number 3 guy.
That's
they'd,
the problem.
They'd pay him number 1 or number 2 money and then get 9 games out of him.
Right.
And that's 40 catches for 650 yards.
Right.
That's I don't believe that's a mistake they can afford.
Well, no, they can't do that, but in terms of building a roster, I mean, look at these cap casualties and look at situations. I mean, Emmanuel Sanders went to San Francisco, and he was like a third option out there too, but didn't cost him this kind of money. Now, a cap casualty with free agency. You got Amari Cooper out there. You got to have, you know, some other receivers. I mentioned A.J. Green. Who knows about that situation? We don't know what the number is going to be at Sammy Watkins, but if he's wide receiver number three, I'm just saying that caliber of player is your third option through your offense and passing game. If you can bolster your roster that way, now you're dealing with something.
Top story, Ari.
Number one.
So back to our top story of the day late yesterday, and that was Philip Rivers. That's it. He's no longer in L.A. He's no longer an L.A. Charger. Dean Spanos released a ridiculous statement talking about bolo ties and Rivers' stupid hat that he wears all the time. Should the Raiders dump Derek Carr, take on Rivers for a couple of years, draft someone else? The Raiders are sixth choice to land Rivers. They're 12-1 on one odds board. The favorite, the Buccaneers, at plus 170. Also one of the favorites, actually the third choice, is retire. 6-1. So should the Raiders make a run at Phillip Rivers?
Well, first of all, you're not going to make a run at Phillip Rivers. I mean, no.
What do you mean you're not going to make a run? There's a lot of teams that could want him.
Well, no. Let them have him. Seriously. Don't make a run.
I guess that's end of topic.
That was it. Well, yeah, don't make,
make a run.
No, you make a run at Tom Brady. That's what you do. Okay. You don't make a run for Phillip Rivers.
All right, let me hit number one again.
Number one.
If the Raiders don't get Tom Brady when they make a run at him, should they settle for Phillip Rivers?
No. Don't settle for Phillip Rivers.
Wait,
either.
Settle's not a good word either?
No, it's not. You know, you could tell me, you're going to ask me, get rid of Derek Carr for Phillip Rivers, I'm going to say you better keep Derek Carr.
Okay. That's it. That was great. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you believe in Derek Carr? That's the debate here. Is, who's the upgrade from Derek Carr? So you're saying Phillip Rivers is not an upgrade?
He's not an upgrade. No.
On the way back, college basketball, we'll get to the ceremony around Bobby Knight returning to Indiana to celebrate the 1980 team. We're also going to check in with coach down at Houston, Kelvin Sampson.
It's the Big 5 at 5, brought to you by Battle Born Injury Lawyers. It's time for Coach Joe Knows, presented by the Golden Nugget Las Vegas.
Coach Joe's in studio. Mike Pritchard, we're honored to have him today as the company. I think you're back in next Wednesday, so you're going to hear Mike all over the LV Sports Network on Fox Sports Las Vegas and also ESPN Las Vegas. I know last week you did the press box pretty much every day. You guys actually talked on the press box. How'd that conversation go? What do you think, Joe? Does Mike Pritchard know his college basketball?
He's
got
to
know more than McKinnell.
He knows way more about football. But, yeah, he's starting.
Okay.
He knows more than Bischoff.
No. Whoa. Those are fighting words. Those are fighting words.
I can already tell Pritch is my guy.
Is that right?
I can already tell.
I love naming everyone your guy.
Pritch, my guy.
My guy. My best friend.
Are you my guy?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
You're kidding me.
You never really hugged me, though.
I don't think you're... Well, I hugged your mom.
Yeah, you hugged my mom. That was a bad thing.
First of all, you two can hug. There's a lot of stuff in the way of hugging.
There is a lot.
Come on, man. We're from New York. There's stuff New Jersey. Touching,
huh? You guys would touch certain areas before, you actually clinch, so you can't do that.
Man boobs up against each other.
Boobs, whatever.
A lot of friction.
South, all
man,
that.
Yeah,
a lot of friction. I know.
It always comes down to weight, doesn't it?
He's a fat shamer, I know.
Everybody always tries to get you.
Mr. Thin over here, he's a fat shamer.
I'm just pointing
you're making
out
me feel fat. Terrible.
That makes me feel
You know, I never mock at my weight.
I might cry, too.
Yeah.
It's sad.
Rough.
I mean,
rough. All right. So,
fat people have... Oh, man.
Bobby Knight...
There were good people, too.
Bobby Knight's old.
He is old.
But I will tell you, he's always driven me nuts. I'm just going to give my little rant that I've done about 50,000 times because I know you guys in the basketball community, most of you love Bobby Knight. You respect him as a coach, but I didn't like his methods around games, but especially away from games, right? I think if you are preaching discipline and unity and teamwork, you got to set an example for your players and you can't have anger issues, right? We're all human beings, so we all have faults. So make your pitch as Bobby Knight is a legend. Why? Why should I just ignore all of the temper tantrums and the mistreatment of people?
Well, let me just tell you this.
I'm setting you up.
You set me up all you
You're
want.
Gonna hit
I'm
wrong.
Just going to tell you that the guy was an incredible basketball coach, and I think that's definitely out there. You know, what he did at Indiana, 29 years in Indiana, 3 national championships, 11 Big Ten championships. Just incredible. Averaged 23 wins a season. And the thing about him is what he did off the floor, graduated all his players, but just maybe 99% of his players graduated. That's what it's all about.
It's all awesome. It's all awesome, but can you do that without being rude and being a bully?
Built a library.
He's just not going to answer that part.
It was a different type of coaching then. Kids back then, they liked hard coaching. They liked hard coaching.
They weren't
going home to their mom and their girlfriend and tweeting them and saying, oh, coach yelled at me today. That's not working. They're not running to the portal.
So Dean Smith was not a good coach.
Did he get mad at his guys?
Yeah, he got mad at them, but did you hear stories afterwards of him like kicking them, using a whip, throwing chairs across, walking out after a game or halftime with toilet paper and crap all over, going, you're playing like this?
I mean, he was
throwing a vase against the wall with the secretary in the office.
He was a little animated, but come on.
Dean Smith didn't have to do that. There's different coaching styles, Joe.
There is different
You don't
coaching
have to be
styles.
An animal. And that, by the way, it's great that he graduated all his players and he's a hard coach and, you know, he teaches discipline even though he's one of the most undisciplined guys. You don't have to be that way. And it's not a great example to set for young people.
Well, you don't have to play for him either. The guys that went to go play for him made the decision that that's the way they wanted to be coached. They knew what they were getting themselves into. Those kids knew exactly what Bobby Knight was all about. Now, if you're going to tell me that Bobby Knight is not – maybe he did a couple of crazy things.
Couple,
you don't think these other coaches are? Know what these other coaches are doing? Cheating. Bobby didn't cheat.
Well,
you didn't
hear about, also,
you don't
coaches,
hear about Bobby Knight cheating.
There are coaches out there that have reputations that, you know, they're squeaky clean and they don't do that kind of stuff, but they do that kind of stuff.
Well, it's coming out now.
It might actually be a guy that was reared under Knight, Coach K. Am I wrong on this? Am I being a weenie on Bobby Knight?
No, you're not being a weenie.
Would you want to be coached like that? You need to be screamed at?
No. And then certainly what the crap.
Yeah, I mean, like the motivational tech, you know, he goes and wipes his ass. And, oh, here you go. You're playing like, get out of here.
The thing about what made.
Speaks to me like an adult.
What Joe's talking about, and by the way, Joe, I don't know if you defended him very well to Steve right there. But
I know.
I understand. He's incredible accolades, especially, you know, before, like you said, the things changed and that stuff just wasn't tolerated. And here's the other thing. It stops being tolerated when you don't win at the highest level. And I did a whole thing last week, and no one heard it because it was on Sunday morning. I still stand by the stuff with Larry Eustace. I was so happy to see how Colorado State's doing with Nico Medved, because Larry Eustace, the schools don't have to deal with guys like that, and the kids shouldn't have to deal with guys like that, and the faculty shouldn't have to deal with guys like that. You can be a motivator, a good example, without resorting to name calling and being angry all the time.
And that wouldn't happen now. There's no way Bobby Knight would survive now as a head coach. All those tactics of touching players and all that wouldn't happen. But back in the times, it was different. You know, it was a different time. So
did you ever coach like that?
No.
Why not?
I'm not that kind of guy.
Exactly.
You know, I'm not that guy. I mean, that's not my personality.
You're not Bobby Knight either, so I guess people could fire back and go, Joe, you didn't win 1,000 games. But
no, just you know,
you can be a responsible person and set a good example for your student athletes.
There's no doubt, and I think that's what it's all about. But everybody has a different way of doing things, and I just feel like Bobby Knight has a bad rep for the things that he's done, like throwing the chair. And I would have thrown a chair at Teddy Valentine too.
You wouldn't have thrown it.
Teddy Valentine just blew another game the other night. Did you see that call at the end of the Duke game?
You wouldn't have thrown a chair.
All right, I would have thrown a towel, Tark. I don't know. What do you want me to say? You don't like Bobby Knight.
Well, the thing about
it's not without any facts behind it. I gave you the reasons.
I heard your reasons, but I'm going to tell you he was a great coach. He graduated players and he didn't cheat.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, you probably can get away with it if you coach Knight because you recruited those type of players that would accept that. Like
no doubt.
You know, it wouldn't work if he was trying to recruit some other type of player. Like, you have to recruit players that could accept that kind of coaching, right?
He's certainly not working with one and dones. With a guy who's got one foot out the door, they're like, this guy starts screaming at him. I mean,
no question.
Yeah, okay.
And
thanks,
that's what other coaches nowadays, too. Like, I worked for a guy, Tubby Smith, for 12 years, and Tubby Smith, some guys couldn't play for him. And I had to make the evaluation while I was seeing a kid. Will this kid fit? Those old school coaches, Kelvin Sampson. He's another old school coach. Now, those guys are old school coaches that have a way of doing things and are going to get it done their right way. Younger coaches now can adapt to the kids. That's the difference in coaching right now, if you can adapt to the kids of today.
Now, I want to be understanding as well. I'm listening to you. It's not, I don't have like this irrational dislike of Bobby Knight. There's a whole crew of guys who were sort of all the same and buddies, by the way, like Parcells and Knight and La Russa. They all have a seedy side that to me is a bit disturbing. But I sent you guys a video of Knight walks out onto the floor. He's back, you know, for the 1980 celebration. Dick Vitale, who, by the way, was a saint about Bobby Knight, even when things were going to crap, Dick Vitale always defended that guy. So Bobby Knight, in a small way, like, can you be nice to Dick Vitale? Vitale goes up to him, puts his hand behind his neck, and Knight, like, was that fake or real? I thought Knight was going to punch him. And then Dickie V's like, Robert Montgomery, he's playing around. Like, meanwhile, I'm sure Vitale's like, he's going to punch me in the face. Was that fake? Do you think Knight was playing around? Or is Bobby's old now?
He's getting old.
And it happened. He's 79 and, you know.
He's getting older.
If you were cranky when you were 60 and 40, then you can imagine what you're like at 80.
I mean, I think he was joking around, and then he started yelling his defensive chant. Where did that come from? You know, I know he's a defensive coach and one of the best, I mean, I probably wouldn't. I don't know what to say. I don't even know what to say to you
about
this one.
I don't know if he was joking.
I think he was playing with him a little bit, but he didn't know really what was going on at the time.
Yeah.
Let's leave it at that. But yeah. I thought it was great that he went there.
I think he's struggling
after 20 years.
He's struggling a little bit with an old age.
Yeah, I think he is. And I think with 20 years coming back and being there for his team, celebrating his team's success, nothing like it.
What would make him react that way, though, even if he was struggling?
I think just because
him, that was pretty aggressive.
Him and Dickie V are just, you know, they always go back and forth. But you know, you hear Dick Vitale always saying good things about him.
Huh?
Mm. So there's no question.
Joe and I have a good relationship. I was busting his chops again about Orlando Robinson
being on Fresno.
And he screamed at me during the break. All right, quick timeout. We're gonna punch up Kelvin Sampson from Houston in the next couple minutes here.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews. Yep. Brought to you by the Golden Nugget Las Vegas. It's Joe Esposito talking college basketball on Cofield and Company.
We just hand the show off to Joe when he comes in. He's our college basketball expert.
Joe knows.
And we've had incredible luck.
7-1
with the coaches who are coming on.
Coach, 7-1. We're 7-1. They come on, the next game they win. 7-1. Somebody messed it up. I'm not going to mention the coach. Tulsa, I won't say anything though.
Let's start a new streak.
Yeah, let's start a new streak. Coach Sampson will start that streak for us.
Let's bring him up. Kelvin Sampson's with us here on this Tuesday with Joe Esposito and Cofield and Mike Pritchard. How are you, Coach?
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
So where are you right now? I guess, were you guys just at shoot around?
No, practice.
Okay.
No, we had practice tonight, and we're just getting back to the hotel.
Coach, before we start talking about your team, I wanted to go back to the days when you played for your dad. Was your dad the main influence on what made you get into coaching?
Yeah, he sure was, Joe. My dad was inducted into the North Carolina High School Coaches Association Hall of Fame in 2000. He coached for 33-plus years at two different high schools, both very rural high schools. And, you know, he coached before integration. So, you know, he impacted a lot of lives. And I think that's one of the things that I looked up to him for, was the difference he made in so many kids. You know, back in the mid-60s, late-60s, all the way back to the mid-50s when he started, you know, the real kids, most of them lived in the, they didn't have people. A lot of times my dad wouldn't get home until late because he spent his time taking kids home after practice.
Wow.
A lot of times he'd have to go pick them up for school. That's just the way it was back then. You know, it was a different time. You know, there's no cell phones or social media or none of that stuff. It was just people that worked hard for a living, and a lot of those kids were fortunate to. They had parents that let them play ball, because a lot of the parents couldn't do that because they needed them to work in the fields.
Yeah, you know, Coach, keep it in the family. You got your son and your staff, and everyone's well aware. And your daughter is also on your staff. And how great is that to have your children in the office with you every day?
Best job I ever had, Joe.
Yep.
And I tell coaches, at least to my friends, I said you should have one person on your staff that's not a coach, just to keep your program relevant in the social media world 12 months a year. There's so many things that go on, you know, whether relative to recruiting, relative to something's happening with the basketball program. And Lauren, my daughter, is such a great ambassador. She does some fundraising. She keeps us relevant in the community. We have a reading program. We do a we feed the homeless at a shelter. There's a Star of Hope program here where and serve meals to the homeless. She's just in charge of all that. She makes our program look good. And I think that's something that we've had to adjust to in this day and age especially.
You know, last thing about the past, Coach, you know, your superstitions. I remember years ago you were at Montana Tech, used to tape your ankles before a game as a coach. And then I know the story about the blue shirt, but can you tell the listeners about the blue shirt and the red tie?
Well, it was it started off as the blue shirt. That was my first year at Oklahoma. We just got obliterated by Kansas. I think they wound up beating us 25. It was a lot worse than that, if I remember. They had Paul Pierce and that bunch. And our beat writer from the Oklahoman, the newspaper there in Oklahoma City, was doing a post-game press conference, and he grabbed me, and he looked at our six remaining games at Colorado, at Iowa State, at Missouri, home to Missouri, home to Oklahoma State, and home to Kansas. That was the six games. He said, Kelvin, I'm not sure you guys will win another game. You can – well, I appreciate the thought. I said, we're going to try to win the next one. But the very next game, we go to Colorado. I didn't pack that morning. I went home right around noon to grab my Piston stuff in a bag to go to the game at Colorado. And I'd always worn a white shirt. My wife wasn't home, so there wasn't a white shirt that was ironed, and I didn't have time to iron one. So I just grabbed a blue denim shirt. It was literally a denim shirt. In the front. lo and behold, we beat Colorado. I said, I'm going to wear that shirt again. and the next game, we beat Oklahoma State. I said, I'm going to wear that shirt again. Missouri, I said, at home. I said, I'm going to wear that shirt again. Then the next game, we're playing Kansas. It was Big Monday. They had just been ranked number one in the nation that afternoon. And lo and behold, we beat Kansas. And now we're 4-0 with that blue shirt. And then that's when I knew that shirt was working. So the next game, we're playing Iowa State at Iowa State on Fred Hoiberg's senior night.
Wow.
In Ames. And we go in, win that game too. So now we're 5-0. And I'm thinking it's the shirt. And the last game, we played Missouri on their senior night. And my best free throw shooter, John Hutchins, who's the head women's coach at Hutchinson Junior College, Hutchinson, Kansas. 88% free throw shooter. This is a 1-1 to win it regulation. And we went to overtime and lost. But we came within two free throws from winning all six games. And I wanted it so badly to go back to my beat writer and tell him, you're right, we could lose every game, but we also won every game. But I gave all the credit to the shirt.
That's awesome. And you're still wearing them, and you're still throwing that tie off. It's great. We're talking to Kelvin Sampson, and Coach, you're number one in the conference right now. You're sitting at first in the AAC. You guys are making a run. You won seven of your last eight. Tell us a little about your team. You're so young. Tell us a little about what's gotten you to this point.
Yeah, this is the first year that we've been young. I thought the best player we had coming back was Armani Brooks, and he put his name in the draft and decided to hire an agent, and he stayed in the draft. So, we were kind of looking at maybe not a rebuild, but kind of a reload year. We lost four starters: Galen Robinson, Corey Davis, Armani Brooks, and Breon Brady. All those guys are gone. So now we're bringing in all these new guys. Got some guys coming back, but none of them have started.
Mm-hmm.
And so we play five guys in the backcourt, two freshmen, two sophomores, and a junior. And then we play four guys in the front court, three juniors and one senior. So this is the youngest team we've had since we've been at Houston. And it's just been fun watching these guys get better, Joe.
Yeah.
You know, early on, I didn't think we were very good at all. You know, we struggled. Couldn't guard. Not a very good shooting team. Still not a great shooting team. But we've learned to defend. We've learned to rebound. And, we've learned to be connected. So, you know, we've just kind of gotten better as we've gone along.
And you got them all coming back, too. You know, I know Chris Harris is a senior, but, you know, coming off the bench with Mills, I mean, he's your leading scorer, and you've got some weapons. And you had the number one recruiting class so far this year in 2020. You signed a great kid, the Mark kid, an unbelievable player. I remember seeing him. But, Coach, coaching against you when you were at Indiana, when you were at Houston, I can always remember your three biggest staples in your program were always defense, rebounding, and toughness. And I can really see the rebounding. You're number one in the conference. Did you think this team would be such a good rebounding team?
Yes, I did. I thought this would be the best rebounding team. Joe, because this is the worst shooting team that we've had. You know, we lost two kids last year that made 243s. You know, that you can't replace that. So starting in June, when these kids got on campus, we started working on rebounding. We started working on rebounding the first day we could work on it. We went to Italy. Went to Italy this summer on a foreign trip, and I think we out-rebounded those four teams 44-18. Then we went into the season. I think we've been one or two in the nation in offensive rebounding percentage. So we focused on rebounding from day one because I knew that we were going to beat a lot of teams with our first shot. So we had to be a second, third-shot team.
You know, you got a lot of tough games coming up. And tomorrow night you got South Florida. They're coming off a big win against Memphis. At Memphis, and what are the keys for tomorrow night, Coach, for you guys?
You just said it, Joe. Rebound, defense, toughness.
That's your staple. There's no question.
Yeah. No, I think we've we've won three road games, and we've lost two road games. We lost by two at Cincinnati, and we lost by two at Tulsa, and we led both games late. So we had a chance to. We're not that far away from being 11-0. We're not that far from being 11-0 in the league. We're also not that far away from being 7-4 because we've won a couple of close games. I thought we were lucky to win, and then we lost a couple that we were unfortunate to lose. So sitting here at 9-2 this season, you know, you're not going to get them in any better shape. You're not going to, beat them up too much. I think you're young kids. You have to pay attention, especially when our leading scorer is a freshman and our point guard is a freshman too. So we've got a bunch of young kids that play hard, and I think they enjoy playing with each other.
Coach Sampson, we want to say thanks for coming on ESPN Las Vegas. We appreciate it, and we'll be rooting for you. You got to keep that streak going for us now. You got to keep that streak going. Dutcher did it.
I appreciate it, Joe.
Hey,
I appreciate it. Anytime.
We're rooting for you, buddy.
Appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
There you go. Kelvin Sampson, Houston coach, who is an amazing story. They're 9-2 in conference. He's having another great year. This is a guy who was basically banned from college basketball. He was out. He was done. Went to the NBA, spent time in the NBA, and then got a chance to come back at Houston. And, you could tell people about that program, that market. I mean, that's a sleeping giant. Obviously, the history with Guy Lewis is incredible. But there's so many good high school players in Texas that if you – can keep some of those guys around. You're also a spot that dudes want to transfer to or back to, like Grimes, right, from Kansas?
Yeah.
And look at what Kelvin Sampson's done. He's been great everywhere. I mean, obviously, the phone calls and the recruiting stuff did him in, but I bet you if he looks back, I don't know, what do you think he would say? We probably should ask him. If he looks back, do you think he regrets leaving, moving on from Oklahoma?
I'll tell you, I think the experience he had at the NBA was awesome. I remember reading some articles that he was talking nothing about how great it was and how much he learned being in the NBA from the different types of coaching and how to guard ball screens. And I think it was a great time for him. And when he went to Houston, he had a vision. He knew the facilities needed work. He knew that they needed to upgrade the locker rooms. He knew that they had to upgrade a practice facility. If you go down there now, their facilities are top-notch. He's got that program going. You know, Arkansas wanted him. Arkansas wanted him. The athletic director there and him, friends, they wanted him. And he didn't leave. And he stayed loyal to Houston. His son's a coach in waiting. a great young coach. He's going to be a great star in the business in years to come. And he's got the formula. He just knows exactly what he wanted to do when he got there, and he's doing it. And this is a young team. But I'll tell you, he's got a great class coming in, two top 100 kids from Texas. And they're going to be a team to reckon with. And they're a team, I'm telling you right now, that I would not want to play in the NCAA tournament. We talked about 11 and 12 games. We talked about all those different scenarios of what could happen. There's some dangerous teams, and they're one of them.
More of Cofield and Company is on the way, live in the Finley Toyota studios.
Here to close, Pritch is alongside Cofield and Coach Joe. All right, Mountain West Conference basketball tonight as we get ready for Reno in town tomorrow against UNLV. Boise is 10.5 against Air Force. Boy, Pilipovich, come on now.
I'm taking Boise.
Really?
I'm taking Easy. Boise.
Okay.
No problems.
Utah State, and I just said about 30 minutes ago, I think Colorado State is the second-best team in the conference, but they got to win some of these games against the big boys. CSU at home, +2. That's going to be a good crowd there tonight, too.
I'm taking Utah State. I'm taking Utah State. You want to go pizza on that one, too? Are you watching the scores?
I'll say it off the air. I got to decide on that one. I could just bet. I could just bet with the sportsbook legally, not bet pizza. And then I have New Mexico tonight, +16 at San Diego State.
You're losing again because that pizza is going to be tasting great.
We have this bet over under 2.5 losses for San Diego State in conference. All right, they're unbeaten, so I lost the bet. I'm screwed. Stop rubbing it in by sending me slices of pizza.
Don't text
me anymore. I know. I'm
going to try to add a Stromboli.
Oh, you're going Stromboli.
I'm going to add it as an appetizer.
And pizza. And meatballs. And garlic fries.
Whatever I got to do.
I love messing with you.
I
should pay you triple what we originally bet because I was so wrong on this one. All right. See everybody.